I interrupted your basketball programming. I hope you're happy. check the system. It's me, Dominic, from Independent Incidentals. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Live now! Exclamation mark. No more basketball. We're here in the studio, and we're doing a freaking show. Isn't this exciting? I just need to quickly test the audio. Let me replay what just happened. Everything is tangled up. Nothing is ready. I need to get ready. It's so cold out here, ladies and germs. Like, honestly, I didn't expect it to get that cold. It was gloomy all day. I literally, like, I don't know what was happening. I think it was, like, some sort of, like, passerby illness that just came my way for, like, a moment. Because it was literally, like, I didn't have any energy at all. It was so weird. Anyway, let me just quickly test this audio in the studio. Welcome back to Independent Incidentals. Oh, there's a new soundboard. It's really good. That's 2 minutes. That horn honking is 2 minutes. It's 2 minutes and 5 seconds. That's a really good one. Sorry, Jim. You failed. You are such an idiot. My God. And then there's one that's especially for me, the fill-in. it's fine. That one's pretty good. I'm probably going to be using that a lot. And that one. And that one. So this right side on the soundboard right here is my beauty. And of course, I got my sensor back. Oh, was that fun, audience? Did you like that? What are we talking about today? I thought we would kind of stop for a bit because I realize that a lot of the stuff I'm getting overworked specifically. You might be thinking, hey, this guy is getting overworked playing video games. reviewing video games is such a hard job. Yeah. No, I'm not saying that. The video game part is the easiest part. The hard part is trying to find the actual sources and trying to find interviews and all that kind of stuff that specifically are able to back me up on the things that I probably already knew, like, subconsciously, but I still need verification from, you know, the developers or whatever, right? It's just nice to have. It's a nice thing to have. But in this context, I'm going in raw. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing a bit of for the old heads in the audience. We're going to be doing what's called a missing miscellaneous episode. This is going to be part 3 of missing miscellaneous. Yes. Oh yes. Oh, that's so powerful. That is so powerful. Missing miscellaneous is basically the sub show within a show that basically describes things I wasn't able to get through in time, or just basically things that couldn't make the cut for the, like, a fuller episode, right? So, you know, I have around an hour to talk about an episode, usually around 50 minutes, right? And most of the time, I'm able to have enough material, but in this case, we have a bunch of smaller niche topics that are just kind of, like, scattered around. So, we'll be talking about those specifically. I talk about it, like, niche as in niche. We're going to be talking about Ubisoft, but more so in the context of how they keep flopping. But especially because of the newest IP that they finally resurrected again, which was very exciting to me, because this IP specifically has a very near and dear thing in my heart. It's just right there beating at the core of my 4-year-old heart. And let me explain real quick. So this starts with my dad, actually. I bet you didn't expect that. My dad was a very avid gamer back when he was around, you know, in his, like, late 20s, right? A lot of the hardware at the time was very kind of, slow, and, you know, not really, like, sought out yet. And he wasn't really, like, a console gamer. He didn't play, like, Nintendo or, you know, perhaps Sega Genesis or any of those kind of things. He was, like, more in the weeds of, like, actual computer games. He was very into, like, DOS games. We've covered DOS games in my roguelike, the intro to Rogue episode. So if you want to check more about that, then that's the episode for you. But we're just going to go over the sort of overview of how that works. Basically, back in the day, you know, there's, like, DOSBox and all those kind of things that allowed you. Well, DOSBox now allows you to play these old DOS games, which are basically just, like, hard-coded games on the computer that are very rudimentary graphics, but also are the genesis of a lot of games. I mean, you have Doom, you have Civilization, you have Sims, you have Sims City, those kind of games, right? All these kind of games originated from that original DOS era back in the 80s and 90s, which then eventually evolved into actual, like, you know, online games and full franchises and stuff like that. And one of those games was a game called Heroes in Might and Magic 2. I don't know the full title. Don't at me. Basically, the whole idea was that... Let me actually see if I'm recording still. I came into the studio so late. I hate... Yeah, okay, we're good, we're good. How are we looking? Let me actually see if I'm recording still.
Hi,
I came into the studio so late.
He's so
adorable.
Look at him. He's just in his little box, and he's so loud. He's screaming, get me out of here.
Anyway, Heroes of Might and Magic 2, which is a game, it's a strategy game, which we'll explain a little bit more in depth later. But the main premise of this was that when my dad, you know, left college and was still kind of living off the land, as it were, bouncing from, you know, the job that he worked at. I'm not gonna leak. That's for the episode that has my dad in it, which I was actually kind of talking to him about like a couple months ago, which would be pretty funny and interesting. But yeah, no, my dad specifically was really into DOS games, and also was his roommate at the time. His roommate had a lot of DOS games, like a lot of this little disc and plug in and play on the Windows. What 95 or whatever computer operating system they had back then. Windows XP didn't come out until like 10 years later. And like, you know, World of Warcraft, for example, and more niche ones like, you know, see, the thing is that I think, there's also like the Commodore 64, which was like, I think the computer system that he also used, to play other games like, Bard's Tale. I'll have to look into this again. Obviously, this is an overview, so don't expect me to take me at my word. I'm not. This is not fully fleshed out as of yet. So, the whole idea was basically that one of the games that he had also amidst the, you know, original World of Warcraft and Master of Orion, which was more of like a sci-fi civs game. 4X Civ game was Heroes of Might and Magic, which is also technically a 4X game, but it's more of a streamlined, kind of Dungeons & Dragons-inspired strategy game, which was very cool to me as a four-year-old child. Let me explain now. So basically, he got all of the games that his roommate had, because I guess he didn't want them anymore, didn't, you know, have any interest in them anymore. So once, you know, his roommate got married, he had to move out of that apartment. My dad had to move out of that apartment. He took all the games because his roommate didn't want it anymore. And he kept them and he kept playing them from house to house. Even in the house that I had in Mississauga, he still played them. Granted, I don't remember those at all because I was a very small child. But in the new house that I have, we have in Brampton, my dad used to play that game a lot. Especially when he came back from work and he was like, you know, just to like unwind. He used to go on the computer, just plug in Heroes of Might and Magic 2 and just run up a new game and, you know, played well into the night. I think like usually like around 11, like I was trying to stay up like until 10 and my mom was like, nope, sorry, you have to go to bed. And I was like, aww, well, we see the game finished. I remember like I used to either sit on my mom's chair in the computer room. Like it was like a kind of like a guest room, computer room where my parents had their computers and also there was a guest bed. So either I would sit on my mom's computer chair or sit on the mattress that was close by and I just watch my dad like battle with these cool armies. And specifically, the whole game is centered around heroes that are conquesting the land, trying to take over settlements and, you know, cities and stuff like that. And you have units, which are specific faction-based kind of units that allow you to do specific things. What I mean by that specifically, I'm being a little bit vague here. Let me explain specifically. You have what are like basically, you have like archers, for example, or like, you know, swordsmen.
But these units are, like, you know, based in tiers. So maybe, like, tier one is just, like, a normal foot soldier and stuff like that. And it kind of keeps going up. But they also come out in different factions, right? So, you know, maybe you get, like, the basic, like, tier one unit in, like, the human faction. But if you're playing, like, as a warlock, you might get, like, skeletons or, you know, some other, like, weird creature. Or, like, in with, like, you know, a sorceress, for example, you might get, like, a mage or, like, something like that, you know? Different strokes for different folks. It's a very interesting concept. And even, like, stuff like Necromancer, like, it's really cool. Because you can play as, like, you know, you can command an army of skeletons and Bone Dragon and all those kind of cool stuff. So, why am I talking about this specifically? Why did I ever bring this up in the first place? This little cute story of me just, like, sitting up at the computer asking my dad about all, like, the things that he's doing in the game, trying to understand, like, how it works, wanting to play it myself but never being able to because my mom didn't let me play violent games back in the day. But they came out with a new game, a new installment to a game that doesn't suck terribly. Here's the thing. Once, you know, there was Heroes of Might and Magic 2 and then 3, and then eventually they kind of stopped the little hiatus. I think then 4, 5, and then they another hiatus, and then, like, most recently 6 and 7, which, like, were like the worst received Heroes of Might and Magic games because it kind of completely took the soul out of it. A lot of that's kind of to do with Ubisoft, which we'll get to in a moment. But specifically with Heroes of Might and Magic, the newest installment, a sort of reboot of what was the older kind of top-down movement-based game. They finally brought it back with Heroes of Might and Magic Golden Age. Obviously, it isn't perfect. There's a lot of things I wish they did differently with this game. But for what it's worth, it made me feel like I was back in that chair again. I was looking back at my dad playing the game and finally being able to play it myself. Because obviously, there are ports. There are ports of these older games in, like, services like GOG and other things like that that allow you to play these older games. Even, like, stuff like DOSBox and stuff like that allow you to, like, you know, even though they're built for older hardware, you can adapt to the newer hardware. Problem is again, Bethesda and the publishers don't really spend that much money or time with their older IPs because, you know, no one's really going to play them or they're not going to make a lot of bank. So, as a whole, they don't really look at those. So they focus on bigger projects, things that'll get them more revenue. As long as they can keep their hands free and, you know, focus on bigger projects, they don't really care about those smaller IPs. So those games are going to be more buggy. They're going to be, like, lower quality, and they're not going to have all the features because all the, like, you know, maybe extensions or add-ons that came with the original game aren't going to be there with the newer game. Which sucks, but at least it's still being preserved. Again, we can go back to Flash for that lesson. At least these games are still being, you know, still purchasable, still, like, available to people to play and not lost to time. But with this new game specifically, I find that it actually is able to hold a lot of the sort of embers that was left by Heroes of Might and Magic 2 and 3, a lot of that sort of flavor that I was kind of missing all these years suddenly flooded back to me. Specifically with the combat as a whole, I was like, this is exactly what I remember. To be fair, obviously, there's different factions. There's different, like, layout of the map. It's more the third game rather than the second game, which was the main game that my dad played when I was watching him. And the main game that he kind of liked anyway. He didn't really find that the newer installments were any better than, you know, classic Heroes of Might and Magic 2. But I find that this game is quite, you know, for what it's worth, for being a quite older game, I feel like it's quite pick-up, it's very accessible, very understandable to kind of be able to understand and learn as a system, right? Because here's the basic premise of this game, right? You play as a hero that goes around in the land, this overworld, right? There's kind of like overworld that you can go around and collect resources, fight other parties, and collect, you know, territories that allow you to get more resources and allow you to recruit more units. Right? You can also play as four factions, each of them, which I think has, like, probably, you know, upwards of 40 characters, maybe, like, 20 characters each, which is crazy to me. For now, it's four factions. They're actually going to think of adding it to six, because this is only a demo, and I'm still, like, I have, like, 9 hours into it so far. It's actually really good for just being a demo. Like, I'm pretty keen on being able to open my wallet afterwards, I'll tell you that much. But basically, you have four different factions, which are the Temple, which is the human faction, which is a more, like, pious, more godly faction. And then, obviously, you have the antithesis to that. You have the Necromancers, which is the more undead faction. You have, like, a lot of liches, kind of lifesteal-based, while the former one is more, you know, buffs-based, more, like, you know, give you statuses, boons, stuff like that to your troops, and just kind of give a general helping hand to everybody there. Now, I've never actually played Schism, which is like a completely new faction that is not in the original games, which is basically Eldritch Horrors. It's Eldritch Horrors. It's like, you know, cultists and like weird corrupted elves and abominations. Just like big tentacle monsters, which I think is really cool, which I might want to try out later down the line. But right now I'm really enjoying the Dungeon faction, which is basically just a bunch of mythological creatures, and it's the one I'm kind of most fond of when I think of the original Heroes of Might and Magic 2 game. Because Hydras, man, they just sort of look so cool. Minotaurs as well, and obviously dragons. Like, it just has everything that you need, right? Obviously, I'm doing a little bit of, like, a troglodyte build. So, basically, the whole point is that you have six available slots that you can put your units in. These units, if they're identical to each other, can stack. So, you can have, like, upwards to, like, oh, I think 999, or even probably more than that, units in one slot. For example, I have, like, you know, a bunch of troglodytes that are, like, I think I have, like, 105 troglodytes in one specific slot. Then I have infiltrators, which are these, like, you know, cool dark elves that kind of blink in and out. Then you have, like, you know, these sword dancers are able to throw glaives, and each of them take up their own individual slot. Now, the cool thing specifically is that it's all about strategy. It's about placing these units in very advantageous positions that allow you to be able to defeat your enemies in a very strategic way. A lot of the game is just placement. It's placement. Like, the more of the combat-focused part of the game is placement and understanding how the units work on the opposing ends, right? There's some abilities that aren't going to work on undead people, and there's some undead abilities that aren't going to work on living people. You're not going to be able to lifesteal from another undead person. And sometimes there's, like, you know, wards that keep undead things away from more divine factions. So it's a very interesting, very concise and, you know, understandable system, while also giving you a bit of that, you know, greasy grittiness, a little bit more of granularity with the game itself. Like, I remember my dad used to have, like, upwards of, like, five heroes at a time, like, going around the map, taking over lands, and then constantly, like, you know, playing this one, like, campaign that he had, like, going for, like, at least, like, a week or even a month sometimes. It's a very fun thing to watch and a very fun thing to play as well. Of course, there is some critiques that I've seen, myself included, but also, like, in the community, like, a very small community as a whole. The UI, man, I think it's fine. Like, for Civilization VI, for example, they obviously had a stylistic change from Civilization V, which is a more realistic, more historical, kind of grounded atmosphere, to a more cartoonish style, which I think is fine for the most part. It doesn't, like, concern me too much. It just kind of doesn't really fit with Heroes of Might and Magic, I think. I didn't mind it too much, but when I look at it again, I'm like, it does look like a freaking mobile game, man. It doesn't have the same sort of, like, grand vibe. Like, it with Civilization VI, it kind of has that more goofy vibe anyway, because, like, you have inside jokes like Nuclear Gandhi and, like, stuff like that, right? The whole idea of, like, you know, different leaders time traveling and fighting each other in the real world is kind of a goofy concept as a whole. So you're obviously gonna have that sort of silly idea. But as a whole, I think the game kind of doesn't really take itself seriously as much, which is kind of sad, in my opinion. I think they should kind of... I don't think it really makes sense to change it. Just maybe, like, change the UI to make it, like, look more regal. Or, like, a little bit more, like, uptight. Because I feel like if I just look at a screen and it has, like, you know, blue, boring, like, hexagon buttons that kind of look like a loading page for, like, a Flash game in the late 2000s that looks like it's for the Avengers. It's not going to be, like... I'm not going to really feel like I'm in a fantasy setting. Like, it doesn't feel Tolkien, it doesn't feel Dungeons & Dragons to me that much, right? It has to have that sort of, like, you know, leather and parchment sort of vibe rather than the high, strong, technical vibe of a Civilization game. It doesn't fit, brother. It doesn't fit, in my opinion. And also, I feel like, other than that, most of it just feels right to me. Some people have like a bit of gripes with how they're kind of managing the factions and stuff like that. Obviously, I've never, you know, touched Heroes of Might and Magic 3 before, and I've only watched my dad play Heroes of Might and Magic 2. But at the same time, I feel like there's still a lot of fun to be had with this game. I feel like this game has a lot of fun ideas with it, and I hope it goes well. Because you know who's publishing it? Ubisoft. Ubisoft. Hey, buddy, man, it's okay. Hey, what's going on, man? Oh, you want to eat more IPs never to be used again until eventually you've realized that they exist again? Oh, that's so cool, man. So cool. Let me tell you about a little bit of a story that happened last year. I watched. If you don't know, there's this cool. There's this very, very intricate video game journalist called The Other Frost. He makes a series called Cold Takes, and also Hot Takes, but mostly Cold Takes, which is a very cool internet show that kind of really gives you a very good overview of the gaming landscape and helps you understand, like, what's really going on with these companies? What are they trying to get at? What's their goal? What's their motive, right? And also, he has a very suave and sexy voice, so I can't really look away in a lot of aspects there. He's just very soothing to listen to. Give him a listen to if you're interested. But one of his episodes was specifically about how Ubisoft consistently flops, how they're not really good at keeping IPs, and how they're sort of like on the rope with a lot of people nowadays. They're playing it way too safe. You know what's interesting, though? I was looking up an episode as well. I was trying to look up more information about this because I was interested, like, finding out, like, why Ubisoft and, like, you know, all these other weird things are happening with other companies where they're kind of, like, completely... They're trying to make, like, these rational decisions with their market base but completely failing at the same time with Bethesda. And then I just found, like, an anti-woke video about how, like, they're ruining my freaking games, man. They're making everyone they, them. Me giving everyone pronouns and blue hair. Grr, I'm so mad. And I'm like, brother, there's some more concerning things about these companies than just some pronouns, man. They're not even concerning. I think it's great what they're doing with that. I think the inclusivity is fantastic. The problem is that they're funneling all their money and wasting it on disgusting, like, revamps of, like, old IPs, resurrecting them like corpses. Like, what they're doing, like, with EA's doing with Plants vs. Zombies, for example, just completely overriding any of the work that all those talented people did in the original game. Like, these companies, these AAA companies, are just kind of milking the life out of the properties that they own, which is kind of disgusting. And it's interesting, too, the idea that they're just... anything that they're trying to come up with new properties, like with Bethesda and Starfield, for example, it doesn't work. It never does. It just constantly falls flat, and it feels like an empty, boring landscape. Like, it doesn't have anything going for it. It's such an interesting thing. How they're not able to come up with new ideas anymore. They were able to back in the day, but now they're just kind of... They don't have, like... They just kind of collapse on it under themselves, under the weight of having so many people. And you look at, like, indie games that have, like, you know, three people on deck, like, with Silksong, and you're like, why can't you do that? It's not a perfect game, but it's way better than the broken game that you came out with. Like, take, for example, the pirate game they made. I forget what it was called again. I think it was, like, Skull and Bones or something. Hold on. Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones was a video game they came out with back in, like, last year, February, right? The thing is that it already was kind of dead on arrival. And it's... Dude, no. I just realized this. I'm looking at the Steam page right now. It's literally on sale for $8, man. The original retail price is $40, and I'm imagining it was probably already at, like, that much money at a release. I mean, you have to look at the premium collector's edition as well. It's, like, 50% off right now. Still, I'm so... It's so funny to me. It's so funny. The idea that a game that was so highly anticipated was literally funded by some government. I'm pretty sure it was the Philippines government. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was funded by the Philippines government, and it just flops miserably. And you don't know why? You want to know why? They don't know how to market their budgets. They don't know how to actually, you know, make a game that people like. Specifically, Frost, who is the kind of narrator I was talking about earlier, the journalist I was talking about earlier, has, like, you know, there's two specific routes you can go down. Making a good game, or making a game, making any game that is bound to get people liking it, right? Trying to market to as many demographics as possible. Because with the former, when you're trying to make a good game, a game that is actually specifically tailored and has a lot of character and soul to it, you're going to have to take a risk, always, right? Even if it's a very good concept, if it doesn't work at execution, it's going to fall flat. You're not going to have a lot of people buying it, and there's a lot of investors that are kind of banking on the idea that it's going to do well. So, if it doesn't work out, if your game just kind of doesn't meet those quotas, and it's a good game, you have to follow option two, or just go bankrupt, which is, in fact, making a game that is the kind of most appealing to most demographics. Unfortunately, that includes manipulative tactics that then kind of enable people to give up more money, specifically. It doesn't matter if it's a good game. It matters if that sort of small demographic of people, it likes it so much that they're going to spend a lot of money on it, right? If they have nothing better to spend their money on than just to kind of feed the beast, as it were. That's the kind of idea that we're up against here. And again, I remember specifically looking at, like, memes on Silksong. They're talking about, like, how, like, damn, the Silk Pack is so overpriced. Literally, the indie game that is, you know, kind of the underdog in the studio is getting such a huge spotlight, right? It's such an interesting concept to me. The idea that such a small team of people can reach such a big demographic. And so many people do, in fact, like it. And it's kind of a proof that you kind of don't really have to. And it's again with Into the Breach as well. We talked about this, right? With Into the Breach, they've kind of came out swinging with Faster Than Light. They had, like, their big hit. This indie studio had, like, this big hit, and there was just two guys working on it, basically, plus the people that they hired on, and they're like, okay, we can never actually reach that pinnacle again, because constantly with these AAA companies, they're always trying to catch that rush. So what can we do? We can just make a game that we like. And obviously, Into the Breach isn't as popular as Faster Than Light was in its heyday, but it's kind of allowed itself to prolong and give them more funds to make more games in the future. Again, we don't need these huge companies to create such a big profit margin on the landscape. Like, we don't need to make them terraforming the our landscape here. They're just flattening it out into a boring flatland that they can domesticate and farm. When we're trying to make mountains, brother, we're trying to push the boundaries of what we can do. And there's a lot of tools now that allow you to do those things, which is very cool. Which is very cool. I think there's a lot of stuff that's, like, you know, we still haven't discovered about video games. And of course, I can only imagine those are going to get taken over again, and we're going to go through the cycle all over again. However, this year has been very good, extremely good, for indie games and indie studios. Let me take a quick peek. So, a little teaser for our final trick here. There's a thing on the internet called the Streamer Awards. Most of it, I'd say like 90% of it, is literally just an advertisement for other games, right? Which is fine if you want to get your news about like what's new, what's hot, what's coming out, what's people anticipating for. The Streamer Awards is a pretty good litmus test, and also it's a little bit insane with Jeff Keighley at the helm, just piloting the whole thing as if he didn't dress up as the Dorito Pope back in like the mid 2010s. Like, Jesus, man. It still gets me every time. The man. I mean, I don't think he actually dressed up as the Dorito Pope. I do joke, but I'm pretty sure like there's like the whole thing with him like constantly like promoting Doritos and like being in a big Dorito hat. Besides the point, the whole idea with the Streamer Awards is that it's supposed to be like, you know, a kind of advertisement. See what's hot, what's new, what's coming out, what should get you. What are you getting excited for next year? And also, specifically, a sort of handing out of awards is basically like the Oscars, but for video games, right? It took a while for it to actually come out and become popular, but eventually it did. And a lot of the categories, surprise, surprise, are in fact about video games and about... I'm stupid as hell. Hold on, I'm so sleep deprived, guys. It's crazy to me. Oh man. I gotta mark that real quick and then we can go on. So basically, the whole idea is that yes, there are video games. There are video games. The Game Awards does in fact have video games. Okay. But in this case, there's a lot of indie games. That's what I meant to say. Thank you. Right? We can see here specifically, like, even with just Game of the Year, we got, like, all these heavy hitters that just came out recently. Expedition 33, for example. Hades 2, which I talked with Elise, which should be coming out very soon. The episode on Spotify and all other platforms. We have Hollow Knight Silksong, which literally deserved 2 episodes. Because it was that good. And Kingdom Come Deliverance, like all these sort of double A or single A, I guess you would call them, indie studios making these games are becoming such a big hit. And obviously you have Death Stranding and also Donkey Kong Bonanza, but at the same time, these games aren't really getting that much, you know, praise or like aren't really being noticed that much. People are excited for Hades 2. People are getting excited for Expedition 33. A lot of the discourse, there's a bit of discourse, obviously, in places that are more, you know, annoying of people, like, kind of putting them against each other. But I just think this is a fantastic lineup. Like, no matter what, we're going to have a fantastic medley. If you don't know, every Streamer Awards has a medley that's attached to it, right? Basically, just covering, it's a full orchestra cover of all of the games, like a small snippet from the main soundtrack of all of these games, kind of attached together. And I can only imagine the transition of Hades and the transition into Hollow Knight. Like, I am so thrilled to hear those songs. And also, Expedition 33 has a pretty good soundtrack. Like, it's another game on my list, specifically. I might get it when it's on sale, but, like, there's OSTs all slap, like they're all beautiful, like they're gonna knock it out of the park. Like, trust me, there's this guy who just has like this very, like, he constantly switches out through instruments and he just plays them like nobody's watching, or in fact the whole world is watching, who knows, but he just goes ham on them. Listen to the 2024 track. Actually, you know what, it is intermission, I might as well do it. I'm gonna give you a little taste, because I obviously talked about this earlier. I forget what episode it was on, but we did in fact cover this specifically, this topic about the Streamer Awards. However, I can always talk about it again, because it's always a cool treat to see the anticipation to who's gonna win and everything. It's quite a little treat. So let's just quickly do Streamer Awards 2024. Not Streamer Awards. What's it called? The Game Awards. Thank you. Game Awards featuring Jeff Keighley. Jeff Keighley! I'm trying to do like the Super Smash Brothers announcer voice. Jeff Keighley! Jeff Keighley! You know what I'm saying? Like that kind of thing. I need to work on it still. That's okay. Medley. All right. I hope there's no advertisements. Oh, there's a whole... I'm going to pin that real quick. All orchestra, all the game orchestras from since 2017, gotta listen to that. Like, they just, if anything, if you hate the advertisements, fair. I completely get it. I only watch them just to get, like, a little bit of a notion of what's popular. And if you also don't even care for the awards, also fair. Like, I think some of the awards are kind of, like, overdone and don't really matter too much. But the medley, and specifically hearing from, like, all these kind of indie studios that are getting a voice, finally, after a couple of years of domination of all, like, these AAA studios, it's fantastic. I love to see it. So let's just listen in to this little orchestra perform to their heart's content. Why don't we, huh? See, that's interesting. It's not actually playing. I don't know what happened. What the hell is happening? It's not going through the actual thing. How curious. How curious indeed. How curious. Perhaps it's one of the settings, maybe? None of these are on. It's not working. What the heck, man? I just want to take a freaking break. I want to listen to my cool orchestra perform their songs. Whatever. You can listen to it on your own time. I'm not going to figure this out. Because it's too confusing. It's pissing me off. Oh, this actually should work. You can probably hear that on your end. Enjoy. Well, that was inspiring, and I heard none of it. That was, in fact, the Game Awards Orchestra performing the medley of 2024's top games of the year at the 2024 Game Awards. You know, it's a bit of a cumbersome title, but we'll work on it. We'll work on it. It's fine chat. It's fine chat. I think that this music, the fact that, look, listen. Listen, 2024 wasn't the greatest for games. I can put that on the table right now, right? Obviously, there was a lot of cruddy things that are happening in the industry, specifically with all these AAA companies that I was probably talking about earlier. But specifically at that section where, like, you know, the actual labors of love, like, you know, Astrobots and Balatro, which is the only indie game in that lineup. There was a DLC for Elden Ring, for some reason. I still don't understand that, how that even got through in the first place. Besides the point. All the music slapped. That's something for sure we can say right there. And here's the thing. I might as well, for the posterity and for some extra time, because we still have a bit of time before we head out. There's no one after me, so I have the whole studio to myself. We can talk about the games, and specifically who I voted for. I just need to log in real quick. Hold on. Shoot, do I remember what my Twitch account was? Yes, I do. It's automatic. Thank you. I just need to log in again. Screw you. Screw you, authentication. I hate you. Just let me use my damn password. God. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, guys? You know when you're authenticating something and you're like, dang, I wish I didn't have to authenticate this. Like when you're trying to log into your Laurier account, you're just kind of like looking at the screen like, do this again. Do this again? Tell me I have to do this again. Oh, jeez, man. You gotta be kidding me. Maybe it was my Google account, actually. Hold on. There we go. Okay, here we go. Here's like the top hitters, real quick. Game of the year. I voted for Silk Song. Now here's the thing. There's always a toss up because there's usually gonna be Hades 2 and Silk Song back to back. So I was always like, no, I gotta pick between two baddies in the same room. What are you guys doing to me? You know what I'm saying, man? The two baddies in the room. You got Millennium and you got Hornet in the same room. I'm like, I can't choose. But in this case, I feel like, so A is the smaller team, right? So I just think they kind of earn it on that merit. But also, I feel like it was such a labor of love in a lot of ways. Hades 2 obviously, it's a good game. It's a very good game. It's an extremely good game. I think this game completely surpassed and it completely developed on itself. But also, I just think that Silksong never really had a chance in a lot of areas, especially back when it was like in its infancy with the original game, Hollow Knight, which some people still believe is a better game, which I still kind of agree on some aspects of it. But it never had a chance, right? It never specifically had a chance to let itself shine. And obviously, there's some other baddies in the room as well. I mean, Death Stranding, Expedition 33, Kingdom Come, the Monkey Game. I mean, hey. Like, all these games are heavy hitters. But, like, I feel like in its entirety, Silksong has a very, very fun and explorative vibe to it. And I never really had that many problems exploring the world, so it was a very fun game for me. Yeah, I think that deserves Game of the Year, specifically on its world alone. Obviously, Hades 2 is also very good. And there's a lot of things that I made up for, specifically, so we'll go through those real quick. Also, can I say that, like, obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong with, like, these sort of things, especially if you don't have enough server space. But damn did the website suck when I was opening it up to begin with. Like, I opened it up, like, day dot when they opened up the voting for these awards. And it did not work. It kept giving me 404 error, 500 error. It kind of kept directing me to a random, like, could not find the website default landing page. It was so annoying. It was so annoying. Best game direction. I went for Hades 2. Obviously, I'm a bit biased. But the fact that they were able to hold up the lore and they were actually able to make changes to that lore and story, even after the fact they actually released it, was so good to me. Like, they know exactly what they wanted. Even if it wasn't from the start, they listened to the people and they changed it, right? That's what matters. Also, these games, like, they're good. Like, I've Expedition 33 is pretty good. Obviously, I've heard, like, people cried over that story. I imagine it's probably going to win, which is absolutely fair. I've just never played it, so I have to just kind of vote for the one that I know the most. Death Stranding 2, also probably a pretty good story. But I've not heard too many people in my spaces talk about it that much, so. Ghost of I don't really know about that one. And then Split Fiction looks pretty good, but again, it's sort of like a second, it's a part two to It Takes Two. So it's like, okay, what do we, come on, guys. Can we come up with, like, a cool concept? I mean, it's a pretty cool concept as a whole, but, like, come on, guys. I think Hades 2, again, it just was the most static out of all of the other ones, right? It kept itself in most of those regards. Best narrative, none of them really, I'm just gonna skip through the ones I didn't really care about or didn't really know about, so I went for Death Stranding 2 for this one. I should probably actually change this. I'm gonna change this to Expedition 33. That just makes more sense. Yeah. Expedition 33, a lot of my friends were talking about it. People love it, so I'm gonna go for it. And for art direction, I voted for Hades 2. What can I say? I just think that they look kinda hot, okay? I just think that the women in this game, all I'm saying is they're kind of bad, okay? I'm just saying. I'm not taking back anything about Silksong specifically, right? Silksong has a very good art style as well. However, with Hades 2, it has extremely detailed portraits. These portraits are beautiful. The specific landscapes are so fleshed out now, and the art style is still really good. Like, I feel like a lot of the character designs, even for the enemies and stuff like that, like, are very detail-oriented, and they have a very kind of fine scope, but a very detailed scope as well in that regard. Score and music is a hard choice, but I had to vote for my boy Christopher Larkin. I literally have his sheet music. I'm still learning Green Path and trying to learn some other ones too, specifically maybe Dirt Path, Dirt Mouth, and some other ones perhaps. I'm just saying, like, I owe it to them specifically that I have been playing piano as much as I have, right? If it wasn't for Christopher Larkin, I probably would have dropped it immediately. So he's getting me, He's kept me good. He's kept me good. Death Stranding. Why did I keep voting for Death Stranding? I think I was just kind of fed up with the website because it kept like rejecting my vote. So now I can actually go back and vote for the correct one, which is in fact Expedition 33. Next, performance. With performance, it was interesting because they actually listed a bunch of actors who played in these games. Of course, I went with Expedition 33 actor Charlie Cox because I think I've heard him in other games too. I think Charlie Cox was also in Hades too, so it kind of worked out in the end. Let me just check that real quick. Fact check that. He was also in a lot of TV shows, actually. He's more of an actual actor. I'm losing my mind. I'm actually losing my mind. Chat, I'm actually losing my mind, slowly but surely. Next one is innovation and inclusivity. I just vote for Doom, because why not? Games for Impact. A lot of these ones I didn't really know that much, except for Wonderstop. Again, I've never played it, but I remember the person who made Beginner's Guide, and the Stanley Parable made this one, or at least directed it. So it looked pretty cool. It looked like a pretty fun, very, very enticing game that actually like felt like a not a meta game again, which is something that we possibly will talk about next time. We'll once we get through these, we'll then talk about that again. I love the story of No Man's Sky, specifically with its developer, how it fell from grace and then was able to rise back up. Right, I love that full story, that full arc of him. You know, kind of not being able to give up in promises, and then eventually being able to build back trucks with the community, which is like the perfect way to do it, you know? Best community support? I had to go for Baldur's Gate. Come on, what are we doing here? It did win, I think, in 2023, which was really cool, so I had to vote for that. Best independent game. I'm actually going to change this from Silksong to Blueprints, and the reason why is I feel like these Hades 2 and obviously Silksong are like, you know, the baddies in the room, right? I'm just saying, like, they both have exactly what I'm looking for, and also are indie games, which is the reason why they're here, along with, like, you know, Expedition 33 and Bollocks Pit and some other ones too, which is pretty cool, right? Thing is, though, I feel like they've already been in a lot of other awards, so I don't feel like it makes sense to really call them independent. I mean, obviously, Hades 2 is more of a AA studio, again, so you can kind of make that argument as well, but it's only like 30 people. Hollow Knight Silksong is only 3 people, right? But I feel like a lot of its awards is already kind of given as it is like one of the most popular indie games that came out this year, along with Hades. So Blueprints, I think, definitely deserves it, especially because it was a labor of love. It was built for like 10 years. It's definitely going to be a game I'm going to be talking about because I'm going to be playing a lot of games over the break. So be ready for that. That's going to be really fun. Best debut indie game. I actually voted for Dispatch because my friend was kind of upset that there wasn't enough awards that they were in. I think Dispatch was very interesting, especially because it's kind of developed or kind of manned by the Critical Role people, which is really cool. Apparently, they have like their own publishing company as well with like the whole like Darrington Press or like whatever company owns Critical Role IP or whatever. So yeah. That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. And obviously, okay, here's the thing. I have to explain myself. Best mobile game. I'm like, okay, I don't recognize any of these. Oh, no. Una Mosume Pretty Derby. What the hell are you doing here? I thought I got rid of you. And I obviously voted for it. Because obviously, if it didn't bring me any joy, in fact, it gave me a lot of anguish and despair for the current gaming landscape. I gave a lot of these streamers a lot of material to work with, and it's probably some of the most banter I've seen on Twitch for a while. So I think it was kind of my obligation to vote for it, even though it was just literally it's just anime girls. It's just literally anime girls, man, that have their horse powers, man. It's not anything crazy. And here's the thing: best VR AR. I had no clue about this, so we're skipping it. I don't give a damn. I just voted for like the coolest looking one. They had the most sauce and style. Best action game. A lot of these games I didn't really notice that much. I mean, look, some people like are kind of hearkening for Doom: The Dark Ages. Again, I've never played it. And again, specifically with the disgusting behavior that was going on with Bethesda and id in ousting out Mick Gordon, their composer, for supposed grounds of being an annoying person, or at least being like, you know, a less desirable person to work with. Mick Gordon completely threw it back at them and just quit. So it's like, what are we doing here, guys? What are we doing here? Right? I didn't really feel like it was necessary to vote for them in this category. So I went for Hades again. We went for Hades, people. Best action adventure. Obviously, I went for Silk Song. It's just gonna be like, oh yeah, well, I went for Silk Song. By the way, did you see Silk Song? And we got into Silk Song. Silk Song. I went for Silk Song. See me frothing at the mouth at the Game Awards. Silk Song sweep. Hades sweep. I love the indie game sweep, man. It's gonna be so sick. Best RPG. Obviously, I went for Clair Obscur. I never really heard anything about Outer Worlds either. Like, a lot of these games that came out recently, like, they're not really being received as well as, you know, expected. Best fighting game. A lot of these games didn't really, like, catch my eye, so I just went for the Riot one. Whatever, next. Best family game. I'm actually going to change this to... I think Split Fiction's fine. Because I was going to vote for Lego Party because it's, like, an actual, like... It looks like a good... Mario Party kind of styled game. A lot of it seems like a more streamlined, a lot more like fun. The minigames look way better than Mario Party ever could dream of. But in the context of Split Fiction, I think it's a pretty good pick, especially if, you know, it gives those kind of AA companies a little bit more love. Man, I have no clue about sim strategy games. There was Civilization 7, which is like being moderately received. No one's really talking about it. So I was like, eh. There's no real point in talking about that specifically. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to pick the Altars and be on my way. I think I heard someone talk about it. I don't know who, but I'm pretty sure someone talked about it. Best sports racing game. I went for Rematch. Which is the same developers who made, I think, Sifu? Yeah, Sifu, which is the fighting game. when am I not? Anyway. Yeah, I went for Rematch. Specifically on the premise that they made Sifu, and I was meaning to play that game for a while now. So I was like, okay, might as well vote for them for the time being to hold my reserve on them. It's a kind of like an investment that I would say like I voted for them afterwards. Now, this is interesting. Best multiplayer game. Kai and I have actually been playing Peak a lot recently, so that's obviously why I voted for it. It's a very fun game. It's very cooperative. It has a lot of sort of like these very goofy elements. Obviously, it has that you know, what was popularized by Lethal Company, the proximity chat that allows you to hear people within like an actual like virtual space, actually hear like audio based on like how echoey the room is, how many walls are in by, like how muffled, like, you know, the air is and stuff like that. It's actually very fun. It's very, what do you call it? Peak! It's so peak! the peak, man. Got it? Oh, it's so cool. Here's the thing. Best adaptation? Guys. Come on. Where's Sonic the Hedgehog 3? Where did they put my boy Sonic the Hedgehog 3? Where'd you put him? Where did he go? I don't see him. I don't see him anywhere. I don't see him. I just don't see him. Where did he go? Where did he go? I'm actually voting for Until Dawn because my friend's been playing that game recently. So we'll do that. Most anticipated game. I didn't even know Marvel's Wolverine was even being released, so it can't be that anticipated. Obviously, Grand Theft Auto 6 seems pretty anticipated. Resident Evil Requiem. Eh. And First Light, I have no clue. I literally had no clue. So I just went for The Witcher 4 because I've been reading Witcher recently, like for the past year. It's been really fun. And I think that hopefully CD Projekt Red will learn from their mistakes with releasing Cyberpunk on a very bad note. They obviously fixed it in patch, but you know, you kind of have to give yourself enough on release. Like it, you have to optimize your games, man. Like I don't know what to tell you. I just don't know what to tell you. these companies, man, these big AAA companies are just constantly putting out, like, a very mediocre product when they had so many years to work on it. And then, like, for the next 6 months, they're like, okay, crunch time. Everyone gets, like, you know, 18 hours, no overtime. Come on, let's get it. Let's go. Yes. Yes. Let's go. Anyway. Content creator of the... I want to do something real quick. What? Stares at camera. What's going on? Anyway. Content creator of the year is a really interesting one, because I'm like, who's... I'm sorry, man. I'm just saying, who picked this, man? Yeah, obviously you got Kai Cenat, Moist Critical, VTuber, VTuber, and the Burnt Peanut. I'm just saying, and also Cadreal. I mean, look, I don't know most of these people. I don't watch most of these people. I don't watch any of them, to be fair. I just voted for Moist Critical because he seemed like a decent guy to vote for. I don't know. Here's I voted for Dota 2. Who cares? Next. Don't care. Like the esports ones, I'm just like, okay. Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool, man. That's really cool. And that's pretty much it. That's the whole Stream Awards. I mean, not Stream Awards. Damn it. Game Awards. Featuring Jeff Keighley. The Jeff has come upon us, and we're going to have to save ourselves in order to win the day. I hope you guys have stocked up plenty, and I hope that you have your pitchforks ready, because we're going to war. I think. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this. This miscellaneous episode has officially wrapped up. Vote for the Game Awards. Let's hope like some cool games get picked. I think it'll be pretty fun, pretty neat to see who wins. And even if not, even if all the games, even if Hades never wins or Silksong never wins, I'm still happy they'll be in the medley. That's like the biggest reward. So, I love you all. I hope I'll see you next week. I won't see you next week, actually. I'm going to be taking a little bit of a hiatus, and then we'll do one more episode the week after. That is the plan. That is the conceptual plan, anyway. I don't know how it's going to fully work out. I still have probably one more episode to do. Hopefully, we're going to be able to talk about, you know, Undertale and some other meta fourth wall breaking games that I've kind of collected and are interested in talking about. But that will be the until next time. So that will be, in fact, until the next time. So I'll see you all in 2 weeks. Bye-bye. Oh!